Welcome to the Wheat Profit Podcast. I am your host, Agronomy Extension Specialist with Sask Wheat, Carmen Prang. August 1st, 2023 officially marks the date that Sask Wheat amalgamated with Saskatchewan Winter Cereals Development Commission. This comes after a positive consultation period with producers. Sask Wheat has assumed the mandate for winter cereals, including winter wheat, fall rye, and winter triticale. This includes the research, advocacy, market development, grower relations, and communications activities for these crops. This is a perfect time to do a mini podcast series to introduce winter cereals. We hear from the experts as they provide agronomy knowledge and the upsides and challenges to growing these crops. The first crop we chose to cover is fall rye. Today, I have with me Greg Stamp from Stamp Seeds in Alberta. Stamp Seeds is a family-owned and operated seed farm and retail. Since 1979, they have been growing seed for over 35 years. I asked Greg to do this podcast since he has a ton of great information on growing hybrid fall rye. Greg has lots of information on Twitter and videos on YouTube, so be sure to check those out. Thanks for joining me today, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners might have caught that I said hybrid fall rye in my intro. For everybody listening, can you explain what is hybrid fall rye and how is it different from conventional or open pollinated?
Yeah, so hybrid fall rye is essentially when we grow the seed for it, we're planting two different varieties. So you have one pollen receiving variety and one pollen giving variety. So about 93% of that blend, it's called a technical mixture, about 93% of that blend is pollen receiving and about 7% is pollen giving. So you've got a lot of that crop that doesn't produce any pollen that's expected to have pollen given to it by the other variety. So it's kind of like how canola was produced before it was a true hybrid, when it was composite blend, basically type of canola. So CMS method is what it's called to make the one not produce pollen. The new way of what we're going to is doing that, but then also later blending in another variety of OP for the after cleaning. So after we've made that blend basically and grown that seed and cleaned it, now what we're doing is actually adding OP to it as well. Like say a newer variety like Bebop is up and coming, and that'll actually flood the field with even more pollen so that you've got more pollen in the field, so less risk of ergot. So that's the goal with that.
Is hybrid rye more common than the open pollinated or conventional?
I would say the OPs and conventionals are more, there's more acres grown of those right now. It's really a little bit hard to tell. Like when I was looking it up, it looks like of insured acres across Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, it looks like it's about half and half right now for acres of insured. But I think there's probably more acres of OP grown without insurance. And maybe that's a little bit more in the forage market or things like that. So I think OP has the edge on acres right now, but that's changing. I mean, it's only been 8-9 years since hybrids were first introduced into Canada. So being halfway, that's probably pretty normal.
So as a producer, how do you decide which one to grow?
If you're just looking to have some fall grazing or maybe some spring grazing that you'll terminate and plant something else, an OP is fine. If you're going to do something for forage, the hybrids are probably going to have about 5% advantage, if not more. And then a few different characteristics, like maybe a little bit early to milk stage or, you know, some different traits and things like that. And if you're going for grain, you definitely want the OP because you're going to have that top end yield potential. And that can be 20 to 40% yield advantage. Now, under extreme drought, some southern Alberta, southern Saskatchewan, definitely there's been some tougher years where you may not quite see that gap. But if you have kind of an average year on dry land, southern Alberta, southern Saskatchewan, you would expect to see 20 to 40% yield advantage with the hybrids. So definitely that makes sense there.
So I'm assuming you mostly grow hybrid fall rye on your farm and sell that for seed.
Yeah, we also do OPs as well because there is demand for OPs. Like sometimes there's unique markets that require an OP or someone just doesn't want to spend the money on a hybrid. They are more expensive. So we've got both options, which is nice because then it's like, well, you know, it's whatever's best for you, the customer. If you want an OP, go for it. Here's the price. And if you want a hybrid, here it is. The difference is, though, hybrids are, you can't farm save seed with the hybrids. You wouldn't want to anyways, because with a hybrid, you're, you get that yield advantage, but also just contractually, the hybrids are not allowed to be farm safe. But you wouldn't want to, just because you would maybe increase your ergot risk, because you might have different flower timings as that crop would be more ragged potentially. And so I would worry about ergot, and then yield potentially, you wouldn't be much better or any different than an OP. No advantage to farm save there.
Good to know. So we've touched on a few end uses already. So you've mentioned like the forages or feed. Are there any other end uses for this crop?
Milling and distilling, those are big markets. Ethanol, can be used in ethanol. Apparently, I was told that in ethanol, you can actually tolerate a little bit more ergot than some of the other markets. So that's actually a nice thing, because that's an out if you do have some more ergot without having to clean. You know, and in our area, forage is pretty big because of feedlot alleys. So definitely awesome for making silage. But the interesting thing with forage, milk stage is when you want to take it. You don't gain much yield and you lose quality and makes it harder to pack if you leave it past milk stage. So it's a really early forage or silage that can kind of beat moisture issues. So, and then in our area, we have a lot of people double cropping. So they'll do the hybrid fall rye, take it late June, and then they'll put oats in behind it and double crop. So that is kind of how it's being used in our area for forage. But for grain, it's more similar to winter wheat for harvest timing.
Okay. And that's nice to know that you have a bunch of different options that you can use when you're growing this crop. So are you managing these crops differently depending on the end use?
For forage, you may want to make sure you have a higher plant population, or you may want to make sure you do plant earlier so it does tiller in the fall. So next year you have all those tillers rather than just relying on the main stems, more so than late tillers, but not a lot. In reality, you could manage a grain crop exactly like a forage crop. And the funny thing is with the varieties, like there was some varieties marketed as a forage type or this and that. There really wasn't really any difference forage wise. It was just more grain. You know, they weren't massive grain producers, or the quality wasn't there for grain. So it just ended up in the forage side. But really, you could take any amazing grain yield hybrid and use that for forage. And that's kind of what we've done in the past couple of years, is just we found in some of the trials we were doing, the top grain yielders were also the top forage yielders. Management wise, I wouldn't say there's much difference.
So you mentioned a few times yield is an advantage of this crop. So in general, what other advantages are you seeing to growing fall rye?
With fall rye, you can spread your workload out quite a bit better. If you get a year where the taps turn off in July, then definitely it's taken advantage of all that spring moisture. If you get a year where it's the opposite and the spring is dry and the summer's wetter, it's not quite that advantage. But we've seen that where the rye will end up retillering and you end up getting half your crop from the tillers actually, which I mean, isn't ideal, but it seems to compensate quite well and pull through. Whereas a winter wheat crop isn't quite able to pull through a bad spring, a rye crop seems to be able to pull through better. And then the hybrids seem to have a little bit more stress tolerance and regrowth potential, say for forage, but stress tolerance in general for grain. It seems like the hybrids have much better stress tolerance. It's almost like hybrid canola. It's like, well, where did this yield come from? Well, you know, it got through the tough period, didn't get impacted as bad, and then got some moisture and then was able to utilize the moisture. The hybrid ryes, I feel like, are a little bit like hybrid canola versus traditional canolas. It can still perform even after going through stressful periods. Other advantages, net returns. I really appreciate a lot of the customers that we work with. A lot of them are giving me, okay, well, here's my winter wheat yield. Here's the yield on this. And here's what I was getting in the marketplace. Sometimes rye is priced a little bit lower in the marketplace than say wheat or winter wheat or feed wheat. So typically in Southern Alberta, we're comparing it to winter wheat pricing. You know, often the rye yield is much higher than say a winter wheat yield. Price could be a little bit lower, but often net returns are better with the hybrid fall rye. But seed cost can cost a little bit more because the seed cost of hybrid rye is more expensive than per acre than say a winter wheat. So maybe $10 an acre more, something like that, $20 an acre more for a similarly treated product. One other advantage is erosion control. So we find after pulses like peas, lentils, that pulse stubble kind of disappears pretty fast. And then you are at risk for some erosion possibly. So that fall rye, I mean, that's an early crop that you can get planted and established to try and get that rye in that crop. And then you've got something to hold the soil. In drought years, if you've sprayed a group two like Viper or Solo, there's no research on this, but we kind of just did it by default. Is we had drought years where we didn't even harvest a pea crop, planted rye behind it, and the rye wasn't impacted, whereas you wouldn't want to do that with durum. So it might give you a cereal option that is not impacted as much, or not that we're noticing, but it's not on label. Like it's, you know, you can't plant durum after using a group two like that. That would be a risk. But the rye, we've done it multiple times and haven't had issues, but not a recommendation because there's no real science or testing that's been done around that. It's just, we haven't had issues ourselves in the three or four times we've done that after a pulse crop in a drought year. And then herbicide, just resistance in weeds. It's just, you really change your weed spectrum and you can really throw those weeds off and change up some of the herbicide resistance that we're starting to see in weeds. So that'd be a big advantage.
Those are definitely all great advantages. Like you said, the weed spectrum and the herbicide resistance is getting pretty bad. So it gives us great options to be able to consider. So you mentioned ergot a little bit earlier. So maybe that's one of the disadvantages to growing fall rye. Are there any other disadvantages that you can think of?
Yeah, ergot, rye is prone to ergot. The biggest way to get around that is by seeding earlier and having an even crop and even seed bed. So, but ergot, it can be a risk. Just know you may need to consider a few times that you grow it, you may need to upgrade it or clean it before it can be used for the market you want to sell it into. That's maybe the one downside of a rye. Other challenges? Well, rotation planning. So like I wanted to just touch on that is, what crop do you want to follow? Well, we like following pulse crops, but you can follow a barley crop. You can follow canola crop. Canola is probably the easiest. Pulses, timing, or, you know, mustard or canola, you could follow. One thing to watch for with pulses, what we found on heavier crops, like on irrigation, wherever the combine stopped in that pea crop or something, you get a bit of a thicker layer there. The crop won't really grow through that very well. And then we've also had it where when seeding with a disc drill, we've had a really nice seed bed and we've cut through it with a disc drill. And then we had wind come and kind of blow that crop because we cut it and blew the remainder into kind of windrows that kind of covered over certain spots in the field where there was, say, a track or something. And so that we've had some fun with that. But what we've come to the conclusion of is you probably want to make sure your seed bed is good. So if you're in a higher moisture area or irrigation, prep that seed bed, even if it means knocking down some of your stubble, because a good even seed bed is key for a rye crop to reduce ergot. And then if you're on dry land, not a lot of option. Typically, you don't have a lot of stubble either or residue in the field. So typically that's not a concern. So that's a challenge. But rotation wise, what we saw last year was volunteer barley. Some people had some barley crops and they planted rye on it just for forage. And you could do it for grain too, assuming you're going to hit the feed market, because a little bit of volunteer barley, if there was any that came next year, wouldn't really impact your sale feed. But what we found was the barley didn't get killed off and there was a long fall and the barley really competed with the rye. And where there was more barley, the rye didn't survive the winter as good on a hard winter last year. So potentially make sure you spray that barley out or wait enough or give it a heavy harrow, get whatever is growing if you think it's going to be a competition concern. But really mustards or peas, there's options if you have to go and spray something in the fall. And I had a customer, he was talking to me about residual sprays and he was like, oh, you know, I've got a good stand. Can I do my broadleaf spray this fall? And then hopefully next spring, I'm not in that crop next spring and making tracks. And that's an option as well, is what can you spray this fall for broadleaves like right now? And he's trying to eliminate a spray next spring. So he's got no tracks in his field, which will help his ergot risk.
Can you think of anything to recommend for spraying in the fall right now?
I can't remember what he was going to use now, but octane is kind of our go-to, but for azolams, things like that are safe. Rye is a little sensitive to herbicides, so, or there's just not a lot of data, so not that much is registered on them. So when we do a fall glyphosate prior to our rye crop, we'll often mix in something like Blackhawk. Blackhawk is registered ahead of rye. Most things aren't going to hurt it as far as residuals. It's just nothing's really registered, or not much is, because rye wasn't a major crop. So chem companies weren't spending money. That's changing. They're starting to spend money on the crop because acres are growing and it's becoming more important. If you want like a Blackhawk with your glyphosate for some fall residual, and then you could, if you wanted to instead or in addition, come in with some herbicide. There's actually a great, I'm going to plug the website, stampseeds.com. If you click on rye, I've got a herbicide yes and no chart. And it's just got actives that are safer on rye and actives that are more harmful on rye. And it's not really in the fall that it's going to be harmful. It's more springtime, because that rye is growing so fast that they don't know, or potentially it could make the tillers or the plant do a little something different, because it's growing so fast when you spray it, that it could impact the crop a little bit, which could increase your risk for ergot. So that's really the thing we're looking out for when you're picking a herbicide to spray on rye. How safe is it for a fast growing plant in the spring? Fall time, not as big of an issue. But really, while we're on chemicals, try and avoid higher rates of 2,4-D and MCPA. So like octane has a little bit of 2,4-D, but it's not a very high rate. Try and avoid 2,4-Ds and MCPAs if you can at all.
Well, that is a great resource, and we'll be sure to check that out on your website. Are there any other final challenges with this crop that you can think of?
Not really. It's more of a logistics and management type of thing, like planting time while you're harvesting. That can definitely be a challenge. And then dryness in the fall, like this fall, very dry. Do you go plant into dry dirt and make sure nothing germinates until you get a rain or a snow in October? But then you're kind of behind that optimum plant size going into winter because you want it to be three leaf or better going into winter. Dealing with a dry fall is definitely a challenge.
So yeah, we definitely want our plant to be able to survive over the winter, and that is maybe tied into the winter hardiness trait. Are you able to explain that a little bit more and why it's so important?
Rye is much more winter hardy than winter wheat, and it's more hardy than winter triticale. So, but going into winter at the right stage is key. So, you know, if I could have the rye plant going in at three leaf and two tillers or something going into winter at the end of November or end of October timeframe, depending when freeze up kind of is, that's ideal. But we don't know how the fall is going to be. So seeding timing, you're kind of just taking a guess at where you're going to be. Eventually it will grow, and all it needs to do is swell up and vernalize to survive the winter. And rye will grow in colder soil temps versus winter wheat even. So the soil temp can be down to 2 to 3 degrees Celsius. And it'll be growing. So say into the fall or into the, coming out of spring, it will grow on cooler soil.
Have you ever wondered how your grain is graded? Grade School is an opportunity for producers to watch grading demonstrations. Join us on November 28th in Indian Head and November 29th in Swift Current. Space is limited, so register today on saskwheat.ca for this A+ event.
All right. So for anyone who is considering growing this crop, we want to give them some basic general agronomy guidelines. Let's get the agronomy basics down. For seeding, what varieties for grain and forage are you growing or selling that are popular right now?
We, for forage, Pro Power was the main one, but Serafino was our main grain variety. And really that ended up being a better forage variety as well. So Serafino was our go-to variety. We're trending in towards a couple new ones. SU Performer was a flex grain, so great for grain, but also good option for forage. And then Kasani. And Kasani was a great grain variety. And we do some irrigated yield trials. So we compare forage yield data and quality. And then we also compare grain in farmer size side by side, so kind of 0.2 of an acre, 0.3 of an acre field size, and we put that through the combine 10 feet wide at a time on a 40-foot header. So we go do these grain trials every year to get some real world comparisons, and then we compare that to winter wheat and some fall triticales as well. So we, because then as a farmer, you can be like, okay, well, I could grow these three things. What's going to give me my best yield versus price versus different agronomy considerations? So that's kind of why we did some of the yield trials, just so we could better understand the varieties.
And can people find that data from your trials? Is it on your website?
Yeah, it's all posted on stampseeds.com under the trials page. So you can find past years and this current year's trial information.
So when are you generally seeding this crop? And is there a point where you can seed too early or too late?
Yeah, you definitely can seed too early and too late. Not so much, but it just causes you more problems next year if you seed too late. So as far as the perfect timing, so we kind of go with regions. So Southern Alberta, Southern Saskatchewan, Southern Manitoba, I would say your ideal time that you could plant is probably August 25th, September 20th for the Southern regions. Central, you could probably go August 20th up until about September 15th. And you can go later than that. It's just earlier gives you more time to get established and get tillering in that crop. So those are more the ideal times. You know, if you could pick a perfect date, if it was just like, you know, I could say, oh, perfect time, September 1st for Central Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Southern areas, maybe September 5th, you know, for a perfect date, but that wider window, you know, gives you some flexibility. Last year we had, it was a early year and people were seeding, you know, kind of September 20th in Southern Alberta. And the crop almost got too big because of that wide open fall. And it seemed like the bigger crops, the more lush crops, that have more fertility, like almost excess fertility because it was manured land or whatever. And crops were planted too early, like say September 20th and a long fall, they almost took the winter worse and were hurt worse in the winter. And then on the back end, I mean, you can plant it all the way to freeze up. All it has to do is swell to vernalize. And it'll grow next spring. The challenge with planting late is then you don't have that suppression of weeds because of the physical early growth. And it's got to grow in the spring, tiller in the spring. And that's the disadvantage of planting late and more risk of winter kill. You can go much earlier, actually. You could plant it in June. It's just you need to graze it or cut it or do something to reset it before it goes mid-October and goes into winter.
So if September 1st is the maybe ideal date, what are you planting before what is your crop rotation so that you're harvesting that crop and being able to plant fall rye?
Pulse crops are nice because they're off early. Some people use barleys if they know they're going to hit the feed market, because you might have some volunteer barley that survived the winter or grow next spring. Then if you're hitting the feeder ethanol, that may not matter so much. Canola is really nice. It's easy to control volunteer canola in that crop. The one nice thing after a pulse crop is if you've got thistles or dandelions, do that fall burn, you kind of control those weeds as well and suppress your kochias and your wild oats next spring. People always ask about the next crop. Can I grow a cereal afterwards? Well, no, you shouldn't, because rye sparsely in a cereal crop, you'll have some ergot on those random rye plants in that cereal crop. So you don't want to do that. Ideally, it's nice to have 2 years out of a fall crop of any kind, but rye especially. And if you control your volunteers well in that next, whether it's a pulse or canola or mustard or flax, could control your rye volunteers well in there, which is really easy in those crops with group one herbicides, you know, then it doesn't become a volunteer risk in your next crop. So we're often growing for seed production, we're often growing these crops in rotation with 2 years later, a durum crop or things like that. But then also it's important to do like your fall burn off, you know, don't skip those steps. So I'm assuming, you know, the proper agronomy and recommendations where it's like, okay, yeah, you're doing a spring burn off prior to that. One thing to keep in mind though, if you have a rye crop in this year, and then next spring, you're going to canola. If you have volunteer rye growing next spring, you go to seed canola into that, there's risk you could actually reduce your stand because of that allelopathic effect and or shading. Like no one's 100% sure exactly how it's impacting it, but you may want to spray your rye crop out, wait 10 to 14 days before planting your canola to make sure your stand isn't reduced actually. So
that's great. And we are going to talk about the allelopathic effect a little later on. So what about seeding depth?
Yeah, ideally 3/4 of an inch is perfect. So if you can have your drill set for 3/4 of an inch, we have people that go deeper. It can be seeded deeper and come up from depth. I've seen 2 inches deep. You know, when you've got tillering and you need that plant to get to a certain size in the fall, if you go 2 inches deep, you're going to delay that plant from establishing and getting to a certain stage. If you go too shallow, you're going to have that crown kind of more prone to cold temperatures. So 3/4 to 1 inch is kind of perfect. Gets it below that cold soil depth where it's a little warmer for the crown there on the plant, and still gets you a big enough plant to tiller out in the fall, which is ideal. Evenness is probably key. So making sure that every single row is the same depth. So you get some of these, you know, C-shank type drills and things like that, and it's really hard to get each row equal for seeding depth. So ideally, disc drill or independent opener type drills are crucial so that every row and every plant is the same. Narrow row spacing is probably better than wide. We use a 10-inch disc drill, but all the European guys, you know, they're on narrower spacing and they see 12-inch spacing and 18, and they're like, oh, you know, they're like, you know, that's more risk for ergot, or, you know, because you may have more tillers coming up the sides of a wider row spacing. So we use 10-inch spacing. We have customers using 12. I mean, it's fine. It's just narrower is probably better if you have the choice.
So now time for maybe my favorite question, and this is on seeding rate. And so hybrid fall rye is a little bit different. We aren't seeding pounds per acre or plants per square foot. So can you explain that for us?
You're seeding by the unit. So one unit is 1 million live seeds. So essentially you're only buying live seeds. So that's a good thing, because you know exactly what you're getting. No matter what the germ and seed size is, your price is per unit. So it doesn't really change depending on what our seed size and germ are. Seed size can range from, you know, 30 grams per thousand to, you know, low 40 grams per thousand. At 1 unit per acre, which is kind of the standard industry recommendation right now. It used to be 0.8 of a unit per acre, kind of gone to 1 unit per acre to give a little bit more leeway for problems or differences in seeding equipment and things like that. So then you're planting 1 million seeds per acre, which works out to about 23 plants per square foot. If you go at that 0.8 of a unit per acre, you know, you're about 18.3 plants per square foot. Rye, hybrid rye tillers out like crazy, like more than any other fall crop that I've seen. So if you're planting really early, like say August 20th or 25th, or say late August, 0.8 of a unit per acre can probably be okay because you've got time to tiller. As you get later, you can increase your seeding rates. And so then you want to be at that 1 unit per acre as you go later. Being that it's a lower use rate, it does travel further because you don't need as much seed per acre as say a winter wheat, you know, targeting that 40 plants per square foot or something, or 35. Seed will travel in tote bags. So you can put, you know, 30, 35 acres worth of seed in one tote bag. A lot of seed actually goes out in tote, or on a Super Bee, you can get, you know, 1200 acres on a 1000 acres on a Super Bee. So seed travel is a lot easier than some other crops, cereal crops actually, because of the way it's used.
Perfect. And before we finish off the seeding section, you've mentioned a few times already the importance of tillers. And so this is kind of something different that we've been hearing about fall rye. With spring wheat and durum, we're kind of encouraging higher seeding rates to get less tillers to get most of that yield from the main stem. So can you just explain a little bit more why tillering is important in fall rye?
So the tillering in fall rye, it's going to happen anyways. So I think it's more so that it's key that it happens in the fall. It's fine if it happens in the spring. You just don't get the advantages of a fall crop as much, of the weed suppression and the competition early. So the key is fall tillering. But as far as it just does tiller more, so you just don't need as high of seeding rates. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, we've been increasing rates on, you know, say spring wheat on irrigation, 40 plants per square foot, plus 10% mortality rate. Whereas the rye, you know, at one unit, you're at 23 plants per square foot. So you're counting on the tillers a little bit more on the hybrid rye. If the tillers tiller out in the fall, it's not like in the spring crop where those tillers aren't going to yield as much as your main one and two stems in a spring wheat or a durum. In the fall rye, if it tillers in the fall, that tiller is a full head. And then a rye crop, it'll add a row in the head. So it's not just like a two row barley where you've got two rows. The rye crop just, it'll add another row if the conditions are good. It's really crazy actually. So you get these seeds that are just on the side, and it's, and then you come back and check later and it's like, oh, I got another row here I wasn't expecting, you know? So it's a really, it's a really funny looking head, and it just adds rows in that existing head if conditions are right.
Okay, perfect. Well, that answered my question on that really well. So I guess my final question on the seeding section, does soil temperature matter? And is that something that we need to be paying attention to?
We never really check soil temperature. It's more of a calendar date for planting the crop because it's more so what stage you need to get to by freeze up. But if you're on the late side, it may be more of a concern for you. I mean, rye can grow all the way down to 2 to 3 degrees Celsius. So it'll grow until the soil hits that stage. And I've seen it growing all the way till Christmas in Southern Alberta, where it gets cold and then it warms up at Christmas time or something, and you get a Chinook and the rye's adding a leaf. Like, it's crazy. You know, if you've had a 2 week stretch where it's warm and, you know, the soil has been cold and all of a sudden it kind of warms and the rye is still growing, you know, until New Year's or whatever.
Do you recommend putting any seed treatments down?
Yeah, so all the hybrid ryes typically go out with fungicide, insecticide, seed treatments. Some of that is related to having an even stand or having a faster growing plant as we're going into a cooler soil conditions. And then some of it's a little bit related to, say, Dr. Brian Barris' work on winter wheat, where it showed, you know, better winter survival. You're not planting 40 plants per square foot like you are in winter wheat. You're only planting, say, 23 plants if you're at one unit per acre. So you need every seed to survive. So I think it does give you the best chance of a good crop by doing that. So for us, every winter crop we plant gets a fungicide, insecticide, seed treatment. And some of that related to evenness of crop, faster establishment, and Dr. Brian Barris' work on winter wheats showing advantages by doing fungicide alone and fungicide, insecticide, seed treats.
Do you have any input on preparing the seedbed?
For seedbed preparation, a nice even seedbed is key. If you do have excess straw in certain areas, you could deal with those areas or with the whole field. In Southern Alberta and Southern Saskatchewan, I would say winter hardiness isn't really the key thing. If the plant gets to 3 leaf and a couple of tillers in the fall, winter hardiness is going to be pretty good. And I would rather have a good even seed bed than, say, stubble standing, because we get Chinooks that melts off the snow and then you get cold temperatures. So having standing stubble to catch snow in southern regions isn't really that important. It's good for moisture retention, but I'd rather have a good seed bed and that early growing crop than a little bit of stubble to catch snow on the dry land or something. I'd like that. But I guess on southern areas, you wouldn't have that much stubble. It's more irrigation or that I'm thinking of in that way. And then in central regions, yeah, you want that stubble to catch some snow to insulate a little bit, but I'd rather you have a good seed bed, honestly, than that. So if you have to do a little bit of tillage in some spots because you had excess straw, I'd rather see that so the crop could actually get through it. One thing I forgot to mention was you may see some, as the rye's coming up, you'll see some purplish, reddish purplish on the leaves and stems. And that's perfectly normal. New rye growers always shoot me a text with a picture and like, what's going on? And I'm like, oh no, you're all good. But it's basically when the plant can't really access phosphorus with cool soils, phos isn't as available either. But you'll see in the fall and early spring, a purplish reddish on the leaves. And that's totally normal. That's not an issue.
So I'm glad that you mentioned kind of the purpling effect that you do see. We do often see that in multiple crops, whether that be canola or springweed or durum, when they are short on phos. That is actually a perfect segue into our next section, which is fertility. Obviously, we want to encourage soil testing, and it is based on regions what you need for each crop. But is there kind of a typical rates that you are recommending for certain nutrients?
Rye's a pretty efficient user of nutrients. So the root system on a rye plant is double that of like a wheat plant. So it's just more fibrous. So it can go a little deeper. It can scavenge way more nutrients. So rye in Western Canada has kind of been treated as a bit of a goes on marginal land. It goes on sandy land. They won't fertilize it too much because it's going in areas that are, you know, it's maybe meant to deal with problem soils and things like that. Whereas now as it becomes more mainstream, it's going on good land and it's going in areas where it maybe hasn't for 40, 50 years, right? As far as a 0.5 of a unit of nitrogen for one bushel of rye crop, if you want to target like 100 bushel crop, it's using 50 pounds of actual N, you know, 150 bushel crop, 75 actual N. For us, sun irrigation, you know, we're targeting like a 150 bushel crop is kind of our target that we'll fertilize towards. But we're seem to be putting more N down, like we're making more available to it. But we're also baling off straw. So when we're dropping straw, we're baling and it's getting removed. So we're removing more N from our system. So maybe we have to compensate a little bit more. And we're sandy loam, 2 to 3% organic matter, you know, in Southern Alberta. So not a lot of nutrients are coming from the soil here. Whereas you go up into the black soil zones, more nutrients are coming from the soil. You definitely can cut back more than us Southern Saskatchewan, Southern Alberta people, because they just have more organic matter in their soil. As far as like, say, dry land, if we're recommending someone in dry land, Southern Alberta, maybe 90 pounds of actual N and 25 of actual phosphorus. But definitely in these drought years, or if you're not going into a good profile or you've got some background, you can definitely cut that back. In the worst years, you know, you're kind of in that 20 to 50 bushel range. If you have an okay year on dry land, Southern Alberta, on sandy land in the Palliser Triangle, you can get 100 bushel rye crop on an okay year. Where's that? What's your background fertility and how much do you actually apply and how much money do you want to spend in a, say a drought or something? That's the problem. but likely if you're dry, your previous crop didn't use very much nutrients that you may have applied, right?
Definitely. And that's why we always recommend soil testing. Like I mentioned earlier, fall rye is a pretty high user of nitrogen. So when are we typically applying this? Are you split applying? Are you applying in the spring? And I guess I'll add to that, when is fall rye really needing that nitrogen?
Fall rye uses nitrogen very early in the springtime. I've got some charts on the website again. I've got a chart that shows stem elongation, beginning of elongation. The rye is kind of done using most of its nitrogen. It's peaked already on its uptake. I would say as soon as your crop is growing in the spring, it's that curve has started and it's ramping up. And by the time your stems are starting to elongate, which I would say is early May, you've already hit peak and you're on downward trend for nitrogen uptake. So it's so different than wheat because winter wheat is kind of by the time rye has peaked, winter wheat's just starting on its nitrogen use. So I like to put down all of our nitrogen in the fall with the seed. Now, if you're planting early, there's a little risk that you could have some that's converting over and then is at risk for leaching or something. So if you're in central regions, you may want to get some different advice on that. Or do you use some inhibitors or do you use something? But generally, we don't recommend ESN because it doesn't convert over fast enough next year to be of much use to the rye crop. Whereas winter wheat, yeah, half ESN, great. Whereas like say a rye crop, we would not recommend it. But then being Southern Alberta, Southern Saskatchewan, it's like, well, you're likely not going to have much leaching happening as much as we appreciate a little bit of rain. So likely you're not going to lose that nutrient if it does convert over in the fall.
So what about for other nutrients such as phosphorus, sulfur, or potassium?
With phosphorus and rye, cold soil. So because the rye plant's growing so early in the spring and cold soil, so that makes like manganese and phosphorus more unavailable to the crop. Even if you have adequate levels, cold soil might make it more unavailable to the crop. So We've seen some crops in the spring show some manganese deficiency, like phosphorus deficiency in the spring. So one option is you could use diammonium phosphate, which is more available in cold soil. And so it's more expensive. I don't know if I've really seen a massive benefit to doing that, but we did see some stunting in some of our demo plots one spring. And whether it was manganese or phos from a cool spring, I don't know. Did it impact yield? I don't think so, but maybe it delayed the crop a little bit. And as far as like potassium and sulfur, whatever you would normally put with a spring cereal crop in your region, that's probably fine. In our area, we're not deficient on potassium, so we never apply it. Sulfur, we kind of do ahead of our oil seeds. And on irrigation, we get some from the irrigation water as well. So typically we're not applying sulfur ahead of cereal or pulse ears, and never potassium in our area. But whatever you would do on your cereal crop, you could mimic on the rye crop. But keep in mind, rye is more of a scavenger, so it'll find things in the soil that your other crops can't.
Come discuss the wheat topics that matter to you. Get educated and caffeinated with Sask Wheat November 1st in Moose Jaw and November 2nd in Cupar for coffee shop talks. Hear from industry experts such as Drs. Richard Cuthbert, Tyler Wist, Kelly Turkington, and more.
Perfect. Well, I think that covered off our seeding and our fertility sections really well. So maybe I want to kind of move into our in-season factors. So fall rye is a pretty competitive crop as it's one of the first ones to start growing in the spring, but we still have some weed issues that we are dealing with. And like you mentioned earlier, we are pretty limited to our options that we have for herbicides that are registered on label. But can you just kind of go over again what options that we do have, and then when are we normally spraying those?
Well, rye grows pretty early in the springtime, so your window for spraying is probably before most of your weeds are coming. So it all ties back into that stand establishment in the fall before. If you can get it to tiller in the fall, three leaf stage or better, you know you're winning. And next spring, it's going to be able to grow through late March and all through April. And then it's going to be able to physically suppress weeds. And that's going to be the biggest help to you. But timeline, like Southern Alberta, Southern Saskatchewan, you're going to be, you know, optimum spraying time, kind of mid to late April. And once you get into early May, you're at semi-elongation already, and you're going to put tracks in that crop, which is going to give you more risk for ergot. So the earlier you spray, the better. And also it's safer. So when you go early, that plant's not growing as fast. Once you're into May and it's growing, I mean, you'll have heads in the boot by mid-May, and that head is coming out kind of the end of May. You know, we've seen actually frost hurt rye crops because the heads were coming out of the boot kind of May 20th, and it got down to, you know, just zero or whatever. And you see some blanks in the head on some of the plants, and it's like, oh, that was frost that got it while it was in the boot or just coming out. So that just shows you how fast it moves in the spring when you've got boot or heads basically by the end of May. As far as products, generally we like using octane in our rye crop. If you need a wild oat spray, not a lot of registered options, honestly. And so Liquid Achieve has kind of been the one, but I mean, group one resistant wild oats, that's not going to touch those. So not a lot of great options that are on label, unfortunately. And if you do need a herbicide chart, on our website, stampseeds.com, we've got the rye tab, and the lower in the page, you've got a herbicide actives that are safer or more harmful to a growing rye crop. And for azolams are pretty good, but octane is one we've used a lot of.
Perfect. And you did mention a little bit earlier, but fall rye does have its own kind of weed control method as well, which is called allelopathy. So can you maybe define what that is and then say what it does?
Allelopathic effects, basically the rye plant secretes a substance into the soil or a chemical into the soil that suppresses other weeds. So mostly it seems to work on like grassy weeds. So it's not going to control your boxtail barley and things like that that are more in a problem in winter cereal rotations, but maybe a wild oat definitely could suppress something like that. Honestly, I think the rye crop, it's more physical than it is the allelopathic effect of suppressing these other weeds that are up and coming below the crop. But there is some impact of that on weeds for sure. And rye will have that effect all the way up until flowering. Once flowering is done, it actually kind of stops it. So if you're looking at, you know, if there's a growing rye plant, like that's young, like either a volunteer or your crop you planted, that's going to be secreting all through the spring and until flowering, or on a volunteer crop until you actually kill it. But post flowering, then the rye crop kind of slows down on that. And that's why after you kill it, kind of a week later, 10 days later, that plant eventually dies and stops secreting the chemical into the soil. And then you're kind of home free again to not have risk of planting something else there. You know, we've seen people that have silaged rye at flowering, and they go plant hemp afterwards. But they've done some tillage in between, let's say, so, and maybe left it for 5 days. So didn't seem to have any impact. Essentially, it can help a little bit with reducing weed risk.
Perfect. And so we are dealing with weeds in season, but we are also dealing with disease. And we have touched on ergot a little bit. Would you say ergot's probably the main disease that we're seeing in fall rye? And what else are we dealing with?
Yeah, so far, fall rye is pretty disease proof. Ergot is the biggest issue, and that's mostly managed by maybe mowing field borders if you've got some grasses or something like that, and even crop, and not having tracks in your crop from spraying in the spring. So that's getting your herbicides on early before that crop gets too big. And then when you drive through, it leaves kind of a track, and that track's going to kind of leave it flowers just a little bit later. And then when your whole crop's not flowering evenly, that's where you get that risk of ergot. So anything that doesn't flower at the same time as your main crop, that's going to have more risk of ergot. So, and sometimes just your outside edges of your field. So if you have that ergot that's more, walk into your crop 200 feet, you might find it's better in the middle of your field because there's more pollen flying evenly there. So maybe just bin the outside round of your field separate so that if there is an issue, just bin the outside edges separate and bin its middle differently, and you may have different levels of ergot in each bin. Fusarium doesn't seem to be a big risk. It flowers so early that I think it's ahead of all that, kind of like winter wheat a little bit, but even more so because the rye is flowering way ahead of winter wheat, like 2 weeks ahead of winter wheat, or even a month ahead of winter wheat for flowering. It's crazy, actually, how early it is. And then it slows down. Like rye, it's real fast early, but then it slows down and your harvest timing is almost similar, but the flower timing is almost a month ahead of winter wheat. So fusarium is not a big, real big issue. And from what I've been told, you may not want to spray a fungicide on your rye crop when it's flowering, because I've been told it can make the pollen heavier or not fly as good or more sticky. So then it reduces your pollination because it's got to fly from plant to plant. It's not like wheat where it pollinates its own kind of head. The pollen's got to fly in a rye crop. There's a little bit of work being done right now on, say, doing a fungicide, say, after heading, and that might show some promise. Yeah, typically a fungicide's not needed. Apparently stem rust is a thing in Europe, but here I've never really seen it or never seen anything. And when you grow rye plants, or you look at a picture, the flag leaf looks pretty wimpy. Like the flag leaf is pretty small. In a wheat plant, the energy that it gets from the sun, from photosynthesis, about 31% is from the stem in a wheat plant. And in rye, 57% of your energy is coming from the stem. Your leaves don't matter as much as they do, say, in a winter wheat plant. 57% of your energy is coming from the stem in a rye plant. So stems are important in that crop. And rye is pretty tall. So compared to, say, some winter wheats, rye could be 6 inches taller. Good for people in the southern areas that need some more straw to kind of catch some snow and protect their soil a little bit on dry land. Or if you're baling straw, maybe a problem if you're in the central regions with too much moisture, you know.
Definitely. And what about snow mold? Has that ever been an issue for you?
No, never seen that. But we've seen where just the crop gets too big and it's just somehow it's stressed going through winter, and the too big going through winter can be hard on the crop. If you were to plant it, you know, August 1st instead of August 25th, the plant just kind of stalls out in the fall and gets too big and almost expends too much energy or is too lush. And that seems to be an issue, but I've never really seen a snow mold issue in rye myself, but maybe that's more of a spot, you know, central regions where they get more snow through the whole winter, right?
Perfect. Well, I think that covered off our disease section. So naturally, the next step in the crop growing process would be harvest. What should you consider during harvest?
Winter wheat and rye are going to be mature about the same time for harvest. One thing with rye, glyphosate's not registered as a pre-harvest currently on it. So keep that in mind. And then end users, where are you selling it to? You know, if you are selling it for milling or distilling, or they might have some opinions on whether you could use something as well as a pre-harvest, but glyphosate's not registered. The seeds are a little bit exposed. And I think that's part of it is when it gets mature, this, you can see the seed. It's held pretty strongly in there. The odd time, you know, southern Alberta near Lethbridge, we get lots of wind. So there's time where a standing crop, you can get some wind that could cause some shatter. But honestly, you'd see the same thing in any cereal crop. You'd grow and leave standing like that. So I wouldn't say it's worse for shatter than anything else. In Europe, they leave it standing all the time, whereas we swath it. So on irrigation, we're often swathing it. Dry land, we're typically not. We're straight cutting. But irrigation, swath it. Draw stays green longer than you'd expect. It's like there's no disease or something that's shutting it down, but the straw seems to stay green longer than you'd expect. And it can be a challenge to harvest. Like it'll slow down your combines more than other crops just because it's hard to thresh, or hard to get through the straw, honestly, more than anything else. Wouldn't say it's really hard to thresh. Keep in mind the outside rounds. If you've got more ergot in your outside rounds, bin that separate from your inside rounds, just so you have different marketing options or can deal with it differently. In Europe, what they do is they don't swath anything. They think we're crazy for swathing, but they get more rain than us. And they take it at 18% and they'll either dry it or air it down. And so 14% is dry. So you can take it early and get your combines going. You know, it's maybe the first thing you're harvesting, get your combines sorted out, any problems in with your combines and set up and things like that. So what I've seen people do is take the rye early, get it in the bin, air it down. And it's hot then too in August, because we're harvesting kind of late July is the earliest we've ever gone. And early August is pretty typical. You know, they could air it down. And then often there's a marketing option. So if you're hitting some of these feed or ethanol, often these people are calling for crop because no one has started harvest in a big way across the prairies yet. You know, so sometimes you can get some marketing advantages by getting that in the bin, getting it to your brokers or buyers. But sometimes you can get a premium by getting it to the marketplace and getting it to a feedlot or to an ethanol plant or to someone that's got the pipelines empty and you're the first one to fill that pipeline. So that's one big advantage of an early crop.
Awesome. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up our harvest section. Maybe would you like to just leave us with a few extra tips and tricks to keep in mind?
You bet. I got a whole list of tips and tricks.
Perfect.
Often there's inventory in bins in June. So if you know you want to do something, make it happen in June when there's time to get stuff shipped, delivered, get it in your bin, get your drill prep. To make it happen for a fall crop, you really have to plan it all out and line up all those things for a couple months prior to you doing it. Because if you don't, you're not likely to grow that fall crop. It's a lower water use crop and it's a highly efficient crop for nutrient use. So keep that in mind. It's a bit of a scavenger. Single use on the hybrids. So can't farm save seeds. So that's one thing to keep in mind. It's taller than wheat. We haven't seen issues with midge or sawfly. So even in sawfly regions, it's like we're ahead of it, the sawfly problem impacting the crop. So even where you have sawfly in say a durum or something or a wheat, the rye doesn't seem to be impacted by sawfly. And we haven't seen midge or haven't heard of midge issues with it. So that's something that's different than other cereals. There is a winter cereals program with Ducks Unlimited as well. So last year, and I'm hoping in future years, they'll run that. And it's an incentive to pay you a little to try growing a winter cereal. So it's for winter wheat, triticale, fall rye. And they want to just encourage you to grow more acres than before or different fall crops than you were originally growing and pay you a little bit. So details on the Ducks Unlimited website. And if you do want to follow us, we do send out some tips and tricks, agronomic information on our newsletter. So at stampseeds.com, you can go to the bottom of the homepage and click on newsletter. And we do an email. It hits about 1,500 farmer inboxes. We send out about every 2 weeks. And then we're on social media. We're on X, the new Twitter, right? we're on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, but there's no dancing, no dance trends.
Okay. We were looking forward to seeing that.
Sorry. I'll need some help with doing some of the trendy stuff on TikTok.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and giving us all of the information on hybrid fall rye. We want to just keep in mind that you are from the Southern Alberta area. You did mention how some of the information can transfer over into Southern Saskatchewan. And we did mention that some other regionality things as well. But if you are going to grow this crop, check with your agronomist, talk with your local retail to get that information that will work for your area. And where is your favorite place to get information about this crop?
We have a ton of information on our website. There's some YouTube videos as well that go through it. There's a Western Winter Cereals website. There's a whole lot there. And then the Ducks Unlimited website has a whole lot of winter cereals information. And then you've got your crop commissions, your provincial cereal groups. If your seed supplier can't get you going and give you agronomic information, then there's something wrong. So they would be a great fit as well for giving you all the key pointers you need to know for your farm.
Awesome. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for sharing all of your knowledge on fall rye. And we look forward to chatting again soon.
Okay. Thank you.